Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Sunday, the 23rd of March, Anno Domini 2008, Easter Sunday for at least the Roman Catholics and most Protestants. And I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. News, views, stuff you can use. Things you can lose. Did you pay your dues? Here's my favorite. Last week, Sony. You know all the bloatware that's on PCs?
Yep.
You buy a new PC and there's about 700,000-800,000 things to delete.
Constantly.
Well, Sony will delete them for you for a mere $50.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've been
cheap at twice the price.
Cheap at twice the price. Well, after controversy for charging $50 to remove trial software from hard disks of new laptops, Sony has backtracked from imposing that fee on their customers. Starting on Saturday, yesterday, Sony's Fresh Start software optimization feature became free. Fresh Start is a Sony feature that lets customers buy certain laptops with so-called bloatware, trialware software that laptop makers often load onto new machines. Sony was asking buyers of the VAIO TZ2000 and VAIO TC2500 notebooks with the Windows Vista Business OS to pay an extra $50 for the removal of the extra software. Those customers, by the way, already pay an additional $100 to upgrade to Windows Vista Business OS from the Windows Vista Home Premium. And so they figure if they're dumb enough to pay an extra $100, they're dumb enough to pay another $150, apparently. But after an uproar erupted online on Friday where the people proved they weren't that dumb, Sony has decided to offer the option for free. We want VAIO users to have the best experience possible with our PCs, and we believe Fresh Start will help ensure that happens right out of the box, the company said in a statement. Sony earlier justified the fee by saying it covered the removal of the unwanted software before shipment. The removal of the software they put on to begin with.
Yeah.
See, what happens, of course, is that the companies pay to be added in. So it's an extra revenue stream for Sony. So now Sony is saying, well, if we're going to lose that revenue stream, we're going to have to pick up another revenue stream. So we'll charge you to remove the stuff that we already got paid to put on. I love that.
Well, it's mostly image files. You know, they image 20,000 computers. So if they have to...
All the games and all that stuff that you can load.
So if they have to take one or two computers to remove that software, that does take more time and cost extra.
All they have to do is make another image.
Make one more image,
and then you either give them the bloated image or the not so bloated image. Big deal.
That's a lot of BS.
Well, Dave, I've got to ask you, what do you charge to put the bloatware and take it off at your shop?
We don't put any of that crap on.
Nothing.
There you go.
Okay, just wanted to clarify.
No, it's, I mean, I like folks to decide for themselves what they want to put on the machine.
Right.
To sit there, you know, and spend all that time to remove all this gaming and all this other crap.
Well, that is one reason why the standard Windows PCs cost less, is because the vendors are paying for that adware to be put on the computer. So you as a consumer pay less for the computer because they're getting back-end money.
Apparently
from the other
$50
people.
Less.
Yeah. Well, no, that was just the cost to remove it.
Well,
that's not the money they get when it's added.
Right.
What I was talking about last week and that folks should be very upset about is that they build a system and then they get the price and all of a sudden said, oh, I want to change it to Windows XP. They tell them it's another $150.
Right.
But yet they didn't subtract the original operating system from the original system. They're charging them,
twice.
Like you say, they got it twice for one license.
Right.
Once for an XP license, one for a Vista, and they're only getting the XP license.
That was the whole big mess in the early, one of the early lawsuits against Microsoft, and as an OEM system builder, we've run into it. If you license Windows for any one of the PCs you build, it's all of the PCs you build, whether you put it on there or not.
Right.
So you've already had to pay the license as a vendor for that Windows. So if someone wants a second copy of Windows, you have to pay again.
Yep. So Fresh Start, by the way, before you start lauding Sony on this, Fresh Start is only available to buyers of the two VAIO customizable machines. Customers opting for Sony's Fresh Start could miss out on software including Microsoft Works, bundled with a trial version of Microsoft Office, Sony's VAIO Creation Suite photo software with a Corel PaintShop Pro trial version, the click-to-disc video editor WinDVD, and an edition of QuickBooks Simple Start that will only track 20 customers.
Well, that's right up there with, I think I told this rant a while ago, and it was about a person that brought a machine in, and they had, like you said, that bloatware on there. Well, they had the 60-day trial of Microsoft Office.
And no one realizes that it's a trial. They never read that fine
print.
That's
the problem.
Well, it said it.
Of course it says it, but no one reads it.
Right. So they headed into the shop. By the time they got back, they said, wait a minute, my Word and Excel aren't working. I said, well, drop it back off. I'll take a look at it. The minute I popped it in there.
If they would have told you the error message was, your trial has expired.
Oh, yeah. No. They don't. So I told them, I said, your trial period's up. Well, reset the date. No, I can't. It already says it's expired. Well, you broke it. Put another copy on there. You can't. It was a 60-day trial, and it isn't going to change
it. And most of these trial companies have gotten sneaky, where if you remove the trial software and then reinstall it, you don't get another 60 days.
No, right. It's hidden in the registry.
Right.
Sometimes it's an invisible file buried in a directory somewhere.
Right. Dell did offer this last year for a while and stopped. Everex is offering it. But that's about it. Pretty much, if you buy a Windows box, you're going to get an amazing amount of junk you'll probably never use. And if you do, in 60 days, it'll stop working.
Yeah.
So all those of you out there who got a machine and are excited because Microsoft Office got on it and you didn't pay for it, you will eventually because it's only 60 days.
And we hear that a lot in the Mac world when people are looking to buy a new Mac. Well, what does it come with? Well, none of that junk. Well, yeah, but I need Word. Well, then you have to buy it. I didn't have to buy it on my other PC. Well, one, it was probably a trial. And two, if it was the full Word, you did pay for it in the price of the PC. So they hide it in there sometimes by raising the price of the PC. And then when you tell them that Microsoft Office is $400, they blanch. Although it's really neat. A lot of people knew about the student and teacher license that Office had in the 2003-2004 versions. It was really neat because you got three valid licenses for $150. So that's $50 a license. But it was only licensed to students and teachers. Well, now in the 2007-2008 version, they've sort of amended that and broadened the license. So now it's home and student. So now any home user can legally, people were doing it before, but any home user can now legally buy the home and student version of Microsoft Office Suite.
Right.
$150 for three licenses. And we joke that that's the crack cocaine model of marketing.
Right.
You give it to them cheap when they're at home, and then when you get to a business, you have to pay the $400 for the full version of Microsoft Office.
Right. See, this is what... I run Linux all the time now, and it continues to just stop me in my tracks when I can't get something that I want for either Windows or the Mac. I go, well, I'll just doubt. Oh, no, I'm going to have to buy that somewhere. You know, whereas in Linux, I've got 80,000-90,000 free programs. I can find an equivalent to pretty much anything I want. And download it and run it.
The advantage we're seeing a lot on the Mac world is because the Mac is based on Unix, most of those Unix programs and Linux programs
some of them.
Yeah, a lot of them. Yeah, when there's hundreds of thousands of them, you know, most is probably a big word.
Right.
But a lot of them can be easily ported to the Mac. Many of them already have been, so you can get OpenOffice instead of buying Microsoft Office.
NeoOffice, which is essentially the native version of OpenOffice.
Yeah, with a Mac window-looking interface on it. You can get GIMP instead of Photoshop.
Right.
An OS 10 interface, thank you. Yeah, it's some people still running OS 9. You know, it's like Dave and his customers coming in with Windows 98 and Windows ME and even earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody dares come into Dave's shop with Windows ME.
I had a customer come in this week buying a new Mac.
Don't tell me.
He had ME.
I booted up and they're long gone.
Yeah. What was that, Steve?
I had a customer come in this week looking to buy a new Mac, and he thinks it's about time he got a computer because his is 8 years old now.
Me, Skip.
And it came with ME on it.
Yep. Yep, we see that. It happens. All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller, Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
I'm running my AVG anti-malware scan now, and it's still running, and it says it's found a lot of adware. Is there any program that we can download that will come up when you go to a site that is known for adware or anything like that?
The pay versions of AVG or anti-spyware.
Or Avast.
And Avast anti-spyware and AdAware anti-spyware. The pay versions of them have a preventative measure that will prevent the spyware from getting in. the free versions you scan afterwards.
Well, I have the pay version. This is an 8.0 anti-malware right now.
What's
the name of the program?
AVG 8.0.
Anti-spyware is their program.
Well, I had the anti-malware, and then they had an upgrade, a free upgrade for the that, and it's the 8.0.87 version.
Right.
You may need to turn on the pre-scan or
if you paid for it. Yeah,
it's AdWatch with AdAware. It's probably a similar program.
Yeah, same type of thing that'll constantly scan and be looking for stuff. You might have to go through the help function there and do a little.
And there are also a couple of things that if you buy it, you can download the free bonus software. There's a Registry Repair of Fireware Pro, Firewall Pro, and the Spyware Remover. Now, AVG is specifically for viruses. Mm-hmm. They do have an add-on for spyware.
Okay.
So if you download that and add it in, then you should be able to turn that on.
I would get you from the help menu?
Well, if you go to the website at AVG...
Grisoff.com,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the AVG Internet Security Version 8 is their current version.
Right.
So they don't make a program called anti-malware, so you might have gotten caught by one of the fake anti-malicious software programs.
Yeah, if you have something actually called anti-malware.
Exactly, that's what it says.
That's not AVG.
That's a Trojan that you've got on there, and that's hijacked your machine. And if it asks you to go to the website and spend $29.95 or $19.95 to have it removed, that's the big scam that's going around, and they're literally making millions off of folks.
Yep.
Okay.
So either AVG or Avast are both good products.
One. AVG anti-malware version 7.5.5.
That's what I had, and then I upgraded it to
Internet Security. We're not familiar with that one. We usually use the anti-spyware.
Yeah. But you should be able to turn that on in the... in the preferences. So take a look there and see if those things are in fact turned off. Get them turned on. You should be on your way. We got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco. It is Easter Sunday, 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. All right. Here's one of those stories. As Apple Inc. CEO Steve Jobs promised last summer, Apple has begun leveraging its dominance in the music download business by pushing the Windows version of their Safari web browser to iTunes and QuickTime users running XP or Vista. That's right, whether you want it or not, you'll be getting Safari. Starting on Tuesday, when Apple updated Safari to version 3.1, the company's been posting the browser as a download and Apple software update utility package with iTunes and QuickTime for Windows. Joe Wilcox, who writes the Microsoft Watch blog, was the first to notice the behavior. The Apple updater offered installation of new software, not something that's been there before. Whoa, said Wilcox, who apparently is a fan of Keanu Reeves. Whoa. Computer World has confirmed that the update utility offers Safari 3.1 to Windows users that do not have the browser currently installed. Typically, updaters only notify users of, or in some cases, download and install updates to existing software, and are rarely used to seed new software. The move, however, should not have been seen as a surprise. Last June, when Jobs unveiled Safari for Windows at Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, he clearly tied the browser's distribution to iTunes. In a statement Apple released on the same day, touting Safari, Jobs also hinted at the connection between iTunes and Safari. As with any update offered by the Windows utility, Safari 3.1 download can be declined by unchecking a box. Not that anyone ever does. I have to tell you that I'm not impressed by that. I find it kind of reprehensible that somebody's just throwing stuff on my machine that I don't like. Like bloatware. Now I got to take it off again. But because this is the iTunes update, it's going to come back again next time anyway, and I'm not impressed.
You can tell it to ignore any future
right,
updates.
Assuming you know to do that. But most users won't know to do that.
At least,
and they're being, it's like a drive-by shooting.
At least
whether you want it or not, suddenly it's on your machine. I'm not impressed.
At least it doesn't delete stuff.
I'm not impressed.
How many people that got the IE7 without reading the list? An IE7 installer deletes the IE6. So we ran into all those problems with people that didn't know they were getting IE7 and all the incompatible plugins.
But at least
and
that's
software.
A program that you knew was on the machine to
you
begin
can
with.
Right. It's still,
right.
Still,
right. You could still uninstall it. And a little bit in Apple's defense, because I suppose that's my job here.
somebody's got it.
The update can be unchecked when the box comes up. It can be ignored so it doesn't tell you again. And even if it does download, you don't have to use it. It doesn't automatically become your default. It doesn't delete the browser you already had. I understand the point that it shouldn't have been forced onto you, but in sort of one of those opt-ins. But it does set a dangerous precedent.
It's not an opt-in unless you know about it ahead of time.
Yeah. It does set a dangerous precedent, and it's something we've talked about for years, that no one reads the boxes that come up very closely. No one reads the licenses. And that's how a lot of the spyware gets on your computer in the first place. And that's a big problem with the spyware, that you've allowed it to get in because you didn't read that box that said it was going to come in. So it's sort of as a general
tip.
Yeah,
but
now,
in general, you
boxes.
Trust Apple not to do that kind of sneaky, backhanded, right. low-life stuff. And now they have broken that trust.
Yeah.
I am not impressed. They have broken my trust with them. And frankly, I don't trust easily, and you don't regain trust with me hardly ever. Yeah. I am now very, very upset with Apple for this. I really am. This is just not a good thing. It's not something they should have done. Frankly, they should know better. I thought Steve Jobs was better than that. Apparently not. And we'll see if there's a backlash. But frankly, my trust is broken. I don't know about yours. Go back to the phones. Our next caller is Ginny from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Ginny. What's your question?
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to ask you about a software that was recommended by one of the computer magazines to work side by side with AVG. And it's called ThreatFire. Are you familiar with it?
ThreatFire?
Yes, Threat. T-H-R-E-A-T.
Yeah, right.
ThreatFire.
I am not familiar with it. It is an antivirus program.
PC Magazine Editor's Choice.
Yes. I'll have to look at it, but it looks like...
Yeah, we've traditionally recommended SpyBot in conjunction with AdAware for anti-spyware options.
Right.
Interestingly enough, the ThreatFire website doesn't even mention AdAware or SpyBot in their comparisons.
The thing of it is, Jenny, though... If you're going to run that as your antivirus, then you don't want to run AVG.
Well, it said it could run along with AVG.
Yeah,
but
you shouldn't run two at the same time.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, this isn't really an antivirus.
Yeah, it says it is.
Yeah, it says...
ThreatFire antivirus protects where others can't. It calls itself an antivirus product.
Okay, because it says it'll work along with AVG very well.
Well,
AVG makes many products. Do they say AVG antivirus or do they say AVG anti-spyware?
AVG antivirus.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm sure you could run Norton antivirus and Symantec antivirus together. It's just that will slow your machine down even more as they both fight for each other, fight for control of the machine.
Okay.
And a lot of times what happens is the virus definition files that actually contain how a virus works are picked up by other antivirus programs as the virus.
Oh, okay.
So it can cause more problems than you think you're solving.
Okay.
If you feel you must, run one, then turn it off, then turn on the other.
Okay.
Alternate between the two.
See what it finds. Yeah.
All right.
And that's probably what they're talking about, because a lot of viruses, especially with Norton and McAfee, the virus writers know about Norton and McAfee, so they don't release a virus until it can get past it.
Right.
So you can scan with Norton, and it says it's clean. You scan with McAfee, it says it's clean. You scan with AVG, and it finds viruses.
Okay.
Because the virus writers know about the big product. So that's one of the reasons we recommend a smaller product. It's kind of the Mac analogy. It's a smaller market. It doesn't get as much notice, so the virus writers don't know it's there.
Yep.
Okay, I appreciate your opinion.
Good.
There you go. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
See, somebody appreciates our opinion.
Once in a while.
Once in a while. It's got to happen every once in a while. Our next caller is Jackie, all the way from Toronto, Canada. Welcome, Jackie.
Hey, how are you? I'm actually from Rochester, but we're visiting a friend of ours for the weekend up by Oshawa. And she's a recent widow, and her husband took care of everything on the computer,
but
didn't write any passwords down. So we're having a problem. She's got programs on her desktop that she doesn't need, but we can't get rid of them because she doesn't have an administrative ID on the Windows.
Jackie, what operating system?
She's on XP. I know what you're going to say. There's no way around it.
No,
well,
there is.
There are ways around it, but we don't want to tell the general public,
Jackie,
because then the bad guys will take it over too.
Tell you what, if you would,
mm-hmm.
email me, dave@nwrightpc.com.
nwrightpc.com.
Yeah, dave@nwrightpc.com. And I will get back to you and tell you how to get around that.
Okay.
A lot of folks sit there and say, well, just go ahead and tell them. No, I'm not going to give the keys to the candy store for everybody else to do it. Yes, right. You can figure it out. If you can, fine. Otherwise, I'm not going to help you.
Right, right.
But
right.
Yeah, email me and I'll get back to you this afternoon.
Okay, great. And then I can take care of it because, as I said, he passed away and he was the kind of guy that for the last 20-some years took care of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now the poor lady is going, I can't do anything.
Right. And isn't that a cautionary tale for the rest of us?
Exactly.
Everybody, write down, here's what you do. You write down your administrative username, which on Windows is almost always administrator with a capital A, and your password, and then do the standard trick. Seal it in an envelope, write your name across the back of the envelope so that if somebody did steam it open and try to close it again, they'd have a tough time matching the sides, right?
Uh-huh.
And then stick it in your safe deposit box or your fireproof safe or whatever so that, you know, your passwords are available just in case the unthinkable actually happens.
Exactly, exactly. And and this was a very unexpected situation.
Of course.
Got ill very suddenly and, you know, very unexpected. And so we've been up here this week and I've been trying to help her out. And it's like,
can you get to a computer,
God bless
though?
You.
Can you get to a computer, though, to email?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, yep. Go ahead and email me and tell you what. If I can, I can log into my account from here during the noon hour break and I'll see what I can do from you for there.
Wonderful.
Okay.
And the other thing is, too, I tried to come in through WHAM's website to listen to you live.
Yeah.
The Canadians have you blocked. They won't let anything.
Those dang Canadians.
Yeah, won't let us listen to you live going through the WHAM website. So I backed in through the Soundbites website and could listen
there
you to
go. I wonder if that's the WHAM. Let out the secret. Yeah. That might be WHAM's license with the advertisers that it has to be within the U.S.
Yeah.
We run into that all the time trying to watch BBC TV shows on the BBC website. You can't watch this because you're outside the U.K.
Right.
That could be because when the WHAM website came up, it came up with a Zellers advertisement, and we don't have Zellers down there.
Right.
So that's probably it. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Actually, well, that's a question.
I'm impressing my friend here. She goes, she's good. She knows what she's doing.
Here's a question.
Well, you're a Soundbites listener. Of course you're good.
Yeah, in Toronto, can you watch the BBC TV shows?
I don't know.
As a former British Commonwealth.
I don't know.
and they're still sort of tied to Britain a little bit.
Yeah, but you're probably
the British Queen is on their money. They're not paying the teletax, yeah.
All right, listen, Jackie, your job from here on in is to spread the gospel of sound bites throughout the frozen north.
I do all the time.
That's what I like to hear.
These people are really great. These people are really good. And even taking my laptop into Dave a couple of times. So,
we love you, Jackie.
We love you, too.
Thank you.
And may we say we're sorry for your friend's loss.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
I'll pass that along.
Thank you.
We'll keep them in our prayers. Thank you so much. All right. That's it. We're in the north now. We're about to take over a second country.
Hey,
the international edition of Soundbites has begun. What?
What? No, we've been all the way over to China.
Yeah, we have been.
Remember the one guy from
worldwide. We're the longest running computer show in the known universe.
We don't.
And they're all listening.
With no stinking borders.
I don't know why it is that
we don't need no passport.
That's right. I don't know why it is that Rob keeps dropping the calls from Mars and Arcturus. I don't know what you're doing here, Rob. Let them call in for you, humanist.
We'll get through their accents, no problem.
That's right. All right, our next caller is Dave. Talk about weird places. He's in Akron, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Welcome to America, Dave.
Good morning, Ben. I'm calling about graphics cards. My grandson brought over Medieval 2 to my house, and it ran like, I don't know what. It really was terrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got a relatively new machine running XP with a gig of RAM and a NVIDIA GeForce 6150 LED display adapter on board.
On board.
Right.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, on board video.
That, when I look at the available display graphics cards, it's unbelievable how many are out there. I can't believe that there's that much difference between all these different cards. And what do I look for?
Well, there's two major vendors. NVIDIA and ATI are the two major vendors. and a lot of other companies buy their chips and make video cards. The onboard video that most PCs have, and a lot of Macs have too, is cheaper. A dedicated video card runs faster. And if you're playing games, you want a dedicated video card.
Right.
If you're surfing,
it's stealing some of your that 1 gig of memory.
If you're surfing the web, then onboard video just works fine.
But where do I start looking as far as a chipset?
Well, the NVIDIA, let me NVIDIA. Make this, there's really three big ones. There's NVIDIA, there's ATI, and there's the Intel 940 series graphic chips that come embedded in every laptop, whether you want them or not. If you're buying a card for a PC, well, first, the way you tell whether or not it's, if you've got a separate card, you're probably in good shape. If it's built into the motherboard, you're probably not in good shape.
If the monitor connector is in line with all the other connectors on the motherboard, that's built in.
Right, if it's 90 degrees off.
In one of the slots at the far end, then it's that's usually, but I've seen sometimes they run a ribbon cable over there.
Yeah, mostly. But the idea is, if you're going to go out and buy a video card, buy an NVIDIA.
Yeah.
NVIDIA's phenomenal.
But they leapfrog each other. NVIDIA has the hot card, and then ATI comes out with a hotter card, and NVIDIA comes out with the hotter card.
Yeah, but even so, everybody's got NVIDIA drivers.
Yeah. See, that sort of goes back to the other way. Look at the game you want to buy and see what video card they recommend for that game.
Well, I'd sooner buy something that's going to run, I don't want
50 or 100 games.
Game.
Right, that won't happen.
A high-end NVIDIA card will run most games.
And if you want to do gaming, I would highly recommend getting a 256 NVIDIA card.
Or higher.
Or more, yeah.
And the chipset that's on the card, you know, I'm trying to compare it to the chipset that's on my machine.
Well,
the chipset doesn't matter as much as how much video memory it has. Yeah. With onboard video, it shares memory with your main system.
That 1 gig.
Oh, and by the way, the memory in your laptop is thousands, literally, of times slower than the memory that would be built onto the graphics card.
Well...
And you can go to places like Tom's Hardware and Ars Technica, and they have ratings and reviews. Bare Feet has specific benchmark studies of different video cards.
Bare Feet?
Yeah. Okay. No, Bare Facts. Which
Bare
one is it?
Facts, I think. If you're going to go out and buy one, look for NVIDIA. Something in the $100 and $150 range would be okay. You know, obviously the more you spend, the better, but... $100, $150. I look personally at $150 as my benchmark. So give that a shot. We are going to take a break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, here's a timely bit of news. PCs from Hewlett-Packard, Gateway, Lenovo, and other major computer makers that contain a widely used Intel chipset can't be upgraded to Windows Vista Service Pack 1 if they're running certain drivers. Microsoft has said that Vista Service Pack 1 won't work with, and I quote, a small number of devices, of device drivers, unquote. The list, however, includes drivers for an Intel chipset that's found in thousands of PCs and laptops.
Well, out of hundreds of millions, that is a small number.
Yeah.
It's all relative.
The affected chipset is Intel's 945G Express series, which is used in computers from virtually all major system vendors. It's also found on standalone motherboards sold by Asus, however you pronounce it. The 945G Express chipset driver versions between numbers, who cares what the numbers are? They won't work with Vista. Chipsets provide a connection point for all the key subsystems in a machine. The 945G Express chipset includes Intel's GMA 950 graphics core, which also won't work with Vista Service Pack 1 if those drivers are used.
Apple uses that one.
So, yes,
the
see?
950.
See?
So you can't put Vista on your Apple.
Unbelievable.
Hooray!
As Parallels, by the way.
Right. Well, see, I don't know what Parallels mimics.
Right.
It probably does point it to the full chipset.
Apple's solution? Mm-hmm. Upgrade your hardware. That's so easy to do in a laptop.
That's Microsoft.
Thank you, Microsoft. Yeah. What did I say?
Apple.
Microsoft. Yeah. No. Microsoft.
Or downgrade to XP Service Pack 3.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, this is Vista.
Right, yeah. An upgrade from Vista would be XP.
Right.
And
even Second Life, which originally ran on like half of a chipset. I mean, you had zero choices. If you have this one chipset, you can run it. Now also supports the 945 chipset, except under Linux yet, so I can't run it on half my laptops, but I can run it here. This is, again, the arrogance. I'm sorry. I can understand you only can pick a limited number of chipsets, but every major computer manufacturer uses this in at least two of their laptop lines.
And this is especially ironic, I suppose, that the whole problem with Vista is lack of drivers.
Right.
And now the fix won't work because of drivers.
On machines it used to work on, oh, by the way.
Yeah.
It's not like, well, you couldn't run it before, now guess what, you still can't run it. Now it worked until you installed the upgrade, and now you're done. Thank you.
I hope to God
Thanks
the installer warned you about this.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't that be nice? It just installs and then won't reboot.
This is Microsoft.
Probably won't.
Even more arrogant than Apple.
Well, it's in
Although
the readme.
Although they don't install things you don't ask for.
It's in the readme that no one reads.
Oh, are we back to that again?
Yeah, it's all in the readme no one reads.
Yeah, right. All right, we'll go back to the phones now. We're ranting through the whole show. It's Uncle Dave's story show. Our next caller is Mike from Webster, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Good morning, guys. How are you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
I had a question on the Ubuntu.
Yes.
I downloaded it and burned it to a CD and all that, and I went to install. I got to say, I have Windows XP on there now with 320 gig hard drive with only two partitions. So when I got to the install, you know, it wants to partition.
Yeah.
You have to have room for it. Well, and there's the guided and the unguided and the manual under there. The first one was the guided, and I was going to use that, but I wasn't sure if that was going to erase XP and then it install Ubuntu there.
You get to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You get to make the choice of, I want the entire hard drive for Ubuntu because I hate Microsoft and everything associated with it, or words to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Or you get to say, oh, I'd like to share the drive with my currently perfectly running, or at least running, Windows installation, and make that happen.
Right.
And then you get to say, all right, I've got two partitions. I want to make this one smaller and install it in the latter half of that one.
Well, it wouldn't let me because I have XP. I wanted to keep XP on there.
Yeah.
But I have it set up as 300 gigs and then 20 gigs. And is 20 gigs enough? Maybe.
Yeah.
I wanted to add
20 gigs is more than enough. Okay. A full desktop installation only takes about a gig and a half. So you'd have, you know, another 18 and a half gigs to play with.
Right. It looks nice, and I think I want to try that, and that's kind of what I was looking for.
Well, you can try it right from the CD, except you have to remember how very slow it will be to load files.
Right. Do you have to install the bootloader first so you can pick between Unix?
No, the guided does that for you.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah, it really is cool. I've taken many a Windows machine and said, all right, you know what? Split the drive in half.
Yeah, that's probably what I should have done to begin with. Now, to go and repartition it, that's going to be...
Well, in XP... Oh, dear.
There's a
what
match...
What version of XP?
Service Pack 2.
No, is it Home
Edition?
I don't know if you can do this in Home.
Okay.
But you should be able to go into the drives themselves through the computer management and change your partition size.
Well, that'll wipe them out, won't it?
No, you can grow a partition without wiping out
space.
What's there. Yeah.
Symantec bought a program, Partition Magic, that
does
magic
that well.
And it works. But it's always scary.
It is scary. It's a very scary thing. Back up all your data twice. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Reich, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you 50 minutes after the hour. Soundbites 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And in 54 minutes after the hour, strap yourselves in, kiddies. Go grab your footy jammies, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
I think this freaking I'm going to take it easy.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
No, it's the Easter. Yeah, it's Easter Sunday.
It's Easter. Renewal, spring.
Yeah, you know,
whether you celebrate as a religious or secular holiday, it's time
it doesn't matter.
All my druid friends were celebrating the equinox.
The equinox.
There you go.
And actually, for us in these northern latitudes, the equinox was on the 17th.
Right. Days are getting longer.
Yes. I'm loving it. No, you know, I'm having a lot of fun doing, you know, the rants and all that. And as folks know, as a matter of fact, I've had a number of folks come in. Am I going to be part of the rant? You never know. The thing of it is, and it's all in fun, folks.
There's got to be a certain amount of fear in bringing a machine to you these days.
No, because the one thing I never do, and I never will, is mention any names.
never
that's right.
have.
You'll know you're being embarrassed on the radio, but nobody else will.
And that's the whole thing. And a lot of folks, they don't know you unless you were there. And again, I don't ever say anything to anybody in front of them there, you know, what I thought or anything else. I keep that to myself. So again, it's all in good humor. You know, we have a lot of fun doing this. The rants are simply experiences that I have during the shop. That's all they are. And I, you know, a number of the folks on the board and everything else, oh, you know, you shouldn't go.
Well, it sometimes humbles us to remember what people don't know.
Yeah. And how
ignorant people can be.
It's giving you a view from our side of the bench.
Whenever we have new students come in to work under me at the Saunders College of Business, the E. Phillip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology. And when they come in and first begin, they're kind of appalled at how, and I put this in quotes, dumb, although they often use the word stupid, our faculty seem to them. And I continue to explain to them, we have world-class faculty, people who are world-class in their field. Their field is not computers. You know, there's something all of us don't know.
Exactly.
You put me under the hood of a car and I can pretty much tell you the headlights are right here by my hips.
And where
I'm
the radiator
done now.
Is.
I'm not, and maybe where the radiator is, maybe. But I'm done then. I just don't know cars, okay? These people don't know computers. That doesn't make them stupid people. It makes them normal people who don't know about computers. It's really, really simple. And I am continually humbled by how much I don't know about certain things. Look at Chris. Is there anything about audio and sound and stereos and that stuff you don't know? No.
Oh, yes, lots.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure. But the point is, he sits there and goes, oh, you put the diode next to the
Fisteris
and Framistana, and you get the better sound. Okay. Good
FM
for you.
To me.
If I heard it, it was sound. That's what I know. All right. That's we're going to put Uncle Dave away for a couple of minutes, and I hope you all feel better about not knowing everything about everything. So put away your footy jammies. Clean out your coffee mugs. No, those would be hot chocolate mugs, and we'll be back. Listen, I got to tell you before we go anywhere, I got to remind you what's happening in the next hour. This is very exciting. We're going to have a very, very special guest in the next hour. We are going to have Wagner James Au, or perhaps if I'm lucky, he pronounces it Wagner James Au. He has written a book about Second Life. So we'll be talking a little bit about Second Life. He's kind of the Boswell of Second Life. And we'll be talking to him about Second Life and what he's done and what people are like in Second Life. And it'll be all kinds of fun. Have I got time for a call? No? Then I'll talk a little bit more about Second Life. If you haven't seen it, you can go to secondlife.com and get a little bit of an idea of it. But basically, we'll have Wagner James. I'll tell you about it. I can't help but pronounce it Wagner. I've listened to too much public radio, too much classical music in my life. I can't help myself. All right, we are going to go take a little break. We'll bring you the news, the views, the weather, the sports, all the good stuff that that you normally listen to Wham for. Us being the abnormal, trust me, on Wham. We'll be back on the other side with Wagner James Au. A lot more of your questions, some more news and stuff. So just take a couple of minutes and do whatever you normally do on an Easter Sunday. Check out the news and stuff. We'll be back on the other side of that with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Chris Reich, who, again, comes in here every week and sets up this stuff and gives us of his knowledge, which clearly, as I've mentioned, I completely suck at. And he knows everything. With Rob Linton, who is he's awake. There he is. Hi, Rob. Me, Nick Francesco, and you, Sound Bites, 59 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 8 minutes after the hour. You lucky people. You're listening to Sound Bites. We have a very special guest with us today. As you may know, well, I should do the poll first so you know what you're voting for here. We do a poll every week on our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. This week's poll is about Second Life. And I will let our guest talk a little bit about what Second Life is and what it means and how it works and all of that stuff. But the poll is, are you in Second Life? The choices are all the time, often, off and on, rarely, and second what now? So far, we've got somewhere in the vicinity of 81 votes, and second what now seems to be winning, so we clearly need to tell you what it's about. When you're done voting, take a look at the yellow box underneath. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, asknick.com.
That's
AskNick.com.
Where you can also enter an opinion about this week's poll, because I know for you people, just clicking a little button isn't really enough for you. Our guest today is Wagner James Au. He is both a blogger and was an embedded journalist in Second Life. His book, which I have read and, by the way, enjoyed thoroughly, is called The Making of Second Life, Notes from the New World. It's a privileged insider's look at the almost organic growth of one of the most popular online communities. I'm so excited to get him on the line. Mr. Au, are you there?
I'm here. How you doing, guys?
We're peachy. Great. How are you?
I'm good.
Do you mind if I call you, is it Wagner or Wagner?
It's Wagner or James.
Or James. All right. It may be James, because when I see Wagner, I want to pronounce it Wagner. It's the hell of a classical education. for those of clearly the majority of our listeners, would you please tell us a little bit about what Second Life is and how you got involved with it?
Yeah, so Second Life is an online virtual 3D world, and so that's a lot of mouthful. Really, if you look at it, you're passing by the screen, it'll look like someone is in an online game, like World of Warcraft or something, because you got your character that you control. It's called an avatar. The thing is that everything you see in Second Life is created by the users, because there's building tools and scripting tools. So all the buildings and the clothing and everything in it is created by the users of Second Life. So I got involved in early 2003 when Linden Lab, the company that provides the software and server system for Second Life, was just launching it. And I was writing for Wired Magazine and Salon and some other places. And so they brought me in as something I might write about. And as they were showing it to me, they said, you know, maybe you could write for us, because we don't know what's going on in here. There's like a whole society that's emerging even then,
right,
of the early users, and they're building kind of this small kind of colony. So they needed someone to chronicle that. So they brought me in for a few years to basically report what was happening, what kind of battles they're fighting, what kind of sex they're having, pretty much everything.
Well, and that's the interesting thing about it. You can join it on any level you like. You can be an observer. Mm-hmm. You can be a participant. You can be a person who actually builds stuff. You can be a person who actually has sex in Second Life.
Yeah.
You can pretty much do anything you want. It's pretty fascinating. Your book, by the way, I loved it. The insights were tremendous. I'm the sort of person who rarely marks up a book, but I've got little yellow highlighting everywhere in this thing. And I actually dog-eared pages that I thought were pretty neat. So my daughter looked at it and said, Dad, what'd you do to this book? Because I'm always telling her, treat books with respect. I said, well, there's just too much good stuff in here to not mark it for myself later. But I'm fascinated by that. Now, your character, you and I think, have something in common. Our characters look like us.
Yeah. Yeah, I try to make an idealized version. And I got a white suit, like, on the cover of Making a Second Life. And that's how I usually look, kind of a tribute to Tom Wolfe, the great American journalist.
Right.
Not that I'm on his level, but, you know, kind of right. The ideal.
But that's not the norm in Second Life.
I don't know. I think a fair amount of percentage of people are kind of an idealized version, like, you know, maybe a bit taller, less fat, kind of more stylized. And then there's kind of the whole kind of Maxim supermodel MTV clubbing look. Yeah, that's definitely off the charts. And then there's people who are, like, not even human, like they're robots or giant furry animals, vampires. Furry vampires. Great combination.
Robot animals.
I've been to some of those conventions.
Yeah, you have too.
Okay.
Well, the furries have a huge Second Life now, because you're that much closer to actually being your creature.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of them get pretty hardcore about the whole role play aspect. I mean, I think there's like, I've talked to one of the furry leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I have furry leaders. And my sense is like every furry that has ever been out there is in Second Life, and it's not a huge percentage. It's like maybe 6% of the community. Like,
yeah.
Cause there's kind of like, oh, it's all furries. Well, you know, about 6%, maybe 20,000 active users and stuff. They tend to be really skilled and talented at programming and stuff. Tends to be mostly programmers. So, you know, I kind of call them like the Amish of Second Life. they're really skilled. They're kind of quirky and odd to most people, but you know, their skills are respected.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm fascinated by some of the worlds that people are building. Now, you have to be an actual paid member and pay maintenance fee for your land in order to build your own community. But I've been watching what people build.
I'd love someday to be able to afford an island and have a Soundbites Island in Second Life. But until then, I'm mostly a spectator, and I'm fascinated by what people have built. There are some very detailed, very realistic places, and there are places that I don't know that I want to know the person that invented them.
Just like the real world.
Just like the real
yeah.
world.
Yeah. I read several, listen to several serial podcast novels from Scott Sigler and J.C. Hutchins, and their fans created the book's environments inside of Second Life.
Yeah.
So we can tour the Kraken football bus from Scott Sigler's The Rookie, and we can tour the proto womb from the cloning story by J.C. Hutchins.
Isn't CSI New York in
CSI?
Second
well, yeah. Now that's been all screwed up by the writer's strike. I don't know when they're getting back to that.
I think they're showing it in the next few weeks. Like, it's a continuation. Gary Sinise is chasing the Second Life assassin, and like in the real world, and then he kind of loses her, and so they're going to conclude that in the next couple weeks.
My daughter will let me know. She wants desperately to be there. I'll let her use my avatar. I'm not going to let her have, doesn't have her own Second Life yet. She's only 16, so she'd have to be in Teen Life.
But she'd go to Teen Second Life. Yeah.
Right.
Much smaller.
Now, I'm sure hundreds and thousands of our listeners, knowing our listeners as I do, were saying, sex in Second Life? Tell us about that.
Computer geeks, yeah.
Yeah, right.
I mean, just to go, there's a fairly large cottage industry for genitalia. Because you're born in Second Life, like, Barbie doll or, Ken doll, you got no equipment.
Right.
So, and Linen Lab did not make the equipment, so there's an industry of people selling equipment of all shapes and sizes and interactivity. I don't know.
Yeah, how do you put that? Right.
So, basically, that's why I call one of the chapters in the book Making Love, because it's literally they had to start from scratch, and, like, even the animations, let alone having sex, animations that even hug or hold hands, that had to all be created from scratch. And
many people have done it. And there are actual brothels in Second Life, and therefore brothel workers.
Yeah. Like, I mentioned, quote, one of them. She's like a grad student. She's kind of paying for her school studies by being a escort.
Which, escort, very well put. And that leads us to the other thing. You can make money in Second Life, which translates to money in the real world.
Yeah, because there's an internal currency called the Linden dollar, and you can exchange that on the open market for U.S. dollars. So you buy and sell Linden dollars. That's how people make a living with that.
Right, and there are actually people making. You talked about a vet who came home and sort of made a living there, and some housewives and all kinds of people making livings, and not all of them in the Chris, get that look off your face. Not all of them are in the brothels, although many of them are.
Yeah, I'd say fashion. The fashion industry is probably the biggest. Just not only like clothes, but like hair and skins, like the full body kind of, you can totally customize whatever look you want. So yeah, that's gigantic. There's a woman in, she's on a farm in Georgia, and she's making like 50-60K a year in her fashion.
Making clothes in Second Life.
Yeah. And what's really cool now is real world fashion companies and designers are starting to look at this just really huge economy and ecology of design and starting to get ideas to take into the real world. We're probably going to see that in the next few years.
Right. So instead of in the beginning, it was, let me reproduce, probably illegally, this thing I saw in the real world in Second Life. And now the real world is saying, hey, that's pretty neat in Second Life. Let's have that in the real world.
Yeah. I mean, because the fashion designers in Second Life kicked the butts of the real world designers so far. Like American Apparel opened a shop in Second Life, the official American Apparel building.
Right.
And nobody came.
Yeah.
It's empty because people prefer the virtual fashion.
Well, because the virtual fashion taps into something that the people in Second Life get. It's not, they're in Second Life because they don't want to be in their first life.
Yeah.
So you don't want American Apparel. You want Second Life apparel.
Yeah, it's more fantastic for one thing. You know, like you have a jetpack and, have clothes that fit your jetpack kind of deal. And also just the people will create designs and brands.
Right.
And advertising. So it's like a whole package deal. And you get away from the real world marketing and stuff, and you actually can compete on an equal level with those guys.
Right. And I have to say that people get invested. I get into Second Life rarely. In fact, I was going to go find you in Second Life at one point before this.
Yeah.
And my last month has been, we started a new quarter at school, and I'm the systems administrator. So it's been a busy couple of weeks. But what I've discovered, and I get in rarely, is that I prefer to fly than to walk. But I don't like to just fly. I like to do the page up, home, page up thing. So I jump in the air, start flying, and then raise myself higher. That feels and I know it's stupid to say this, it feels more natural than just flying.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people fly less. That's interesting. Like, you have that ability to fly. In most online worlds, you can't. There's city heroes, superhero kind, you can't.
Right.
But people get uncomfortable flying.
No, well, I don't walk well in real life. I have a cane.
Oh.
And in fact, that's the one thing I have not built for my avatar yet, and so I'm not good at building. But I have a cane in real life, so I find it actually more freeing to fly around. And that a friend of mine showed me World of Warcraft. And all she did for like 15 minutes was run. And I thought, why would I be here for this? Listen, I'm so sorry. We have to go.
Oh, my God.
I can't. Thank you so much. I will try to find you in Second Life. I'm Nihil Infinity, and I will find you in Second Life.
I'll handle it out.
To thank you so much. I appreciate you joining us, ladies and gentlemen. His name is Wagner James Au. The book is The Making of Second Life, Notes from the New World. Please get a copy. You will be fascinated. Thank you so much for joining us. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton. I was disappointed. I was trying to find the bunny hop, but we don't have it in there.
So I was going to say, how long did it take you to find any bunny, Easter bunny?
That's right.
Song.
And any other bunny stuff would not have been appropriate for this show. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that one was themed for Second Life as well.
Good find. Good find, though. I wonder how many Easter bunnies are running around in Second Life. All right. That was actually kind of fun. I got to say that.
I haven't been in so long, I can't remember my name. Is there a forgot your name button somewhere?
Yeah, right. Well, theoretically, in your main machine at home, it keeps it.
Yeah, but I may have swapped machines since then, well, so then, it should be there somewhere.
He's thinking bad. You'll have to invent a new one. But he was very, very, very good.
Yes.
He really was. Apple has made the iPhone more like the BlackBerry, which is kind of interesting. Apple has announced that now they will be able to get into corporate email systems, and that would be Microsoft Exchange, by the way. And that they will have a feature that will let you lock device remotely in the event of theft, which a lot of companies will appreciate, although it's still not all the way to a BlackBerry, where you can actually flip a bit, and when the person turns on the BlackBerry, it will wipe itself out so that all of the corporate data you may have on that BlackBerry will be gone forever.
Which is nice if it gets stolen. They did take a couple of hits against RIM and BlackBerry, not by name, of course, that... most people don't realize if you're using a BlackBerry, all of your corporate email goes through RIM's
the best server in Canada.
In Canada, yeah.
Right.
You know, just across the border here outside of Toronto.
Yeah, right.
So it's, and some people may not like that. So.
I wonder if the complete House and Senate, who all have BlackBerries, realize that.
And it's,
all of their data is going to a foreign country before they get it.
A friendly country at the moment.
But
but from an IT standpoint, you're already running your Exchange server. You don't want to have to put a BlackBerry server in too, so it's less of a hassle from the IT level.
Right, right. All right. Our next caller is Marion from Rochester, New York, patiently waiting on the line. Welcome, Marion. Thank you for holding.
Yes, I have a computer, which most people do. And I forgot the password. It's a Windows password that I locked the whole system up, but I've forgotten it. What options do I have?
What operating system?
XP.
Again, that's something, you know, if you can get to a system or call me on Monday, you know, I can walk you through it.
But it's not something we'll tell people to do over the phone.
Yeah,
it is doable, but we won't tell people over the phone.
So over the radio.
Dave, over the radio, I mean. So give Dave, right, because then everybody out there hears how to do it.
What is Dave's number?
If you call 442-4843, that's NRIPC. Call me, say, after 10 o'clock, because I guarantee you Monday, well, matter of fact, make it in the afternoon, because I know Monday morning is crazy for me. I've already got a couple deliveries from jobs that I've had over the weekend that I promised folks to get the systems out. So call me in the afternoon.
I will, Dave.
Okay.
You take care. God bless.
We've actually
thanks,
had several people come into our shop saying they forgot their password, and we start looking at their machines, and it's not their name on the machine. You know, it's not their address in the machine. And, okay, yeah, maybe they bought it from eBay, and the person who sold it didn't wipe their own personal information out. But the big thing we have to watch out about is, you know, it's a stolen computer. So
Any of you, and this includes you, Marion, anytime anybody brings a machine to any vendor to say, you know, I've locked myself out, bring your receipt that shows you own this machine. I mean, that's only fair. You're asking somebody to do something that, if you are not the owner of the machine, is illegal. So prove you're the owner. It's only fair.
Well, what I give the folks is a simple thing to do it. If it doesn't work, folks have to understand, then you got to bring it in. And yeah, then if I find out something's stolen.
Microsoft's solution is to use your password reset disk that you, of course, made when you first set up your computer.
Which is another cautionary tale to make your password reset disk. All right, our next caller is Blake from Batavia, New York. Welcome, Blake. What's your question? Blake, are you there? Hello, Blake.
Sorry, I had it on mute to make sure you guys weren't abused.
Thank you so much.
My daughter has a Kodak 3-in-1 printer, a 5300, and a Dell laptop. She goes to Ithaca College, and they requested it be Vista, which was a mistake all the way around.
Yeah.
That surprises me. They requested Vista?
Yeah,
but
they
for security standpoint,
to find
maybe.
Out when she got there that the department wasn't ready for Vista yet either, even though they recommended it. So, in any case, the problem is the 3-in-1 printer won't scan from the printer keypad to send to a laptop. The actual scanning light will light up, but won't transverse the platen.
This is one thing that Windows, since Windows 3.1 has never, will never support correctly, is scanners.
Okay.
Scanners have been the biggest kink in Microsoft's software since day one. They just don't do it. And right now, the support just isn't out there in 10-to-1 odds, even the updates for HP, because, you know, they can sit there and write their end. But if the Twain drivers and that aren't working correctly within Vista, no scanner is going to work at all. And that's probably the biggest issue.
Brother-in-law's figured out a way to work with her to get the scan load initiated from the computer, but the keypad won't work at all.
So, yeah, and a lot of times that's a bad thing. HP does that, too. It's a program running in your computer all the time, every second, watching to see if you pushed a button on the printer, which slows down your computer,
eats up
system resources. So generally, that's not a thing you want to do anyway.
Have you looked at the Kodak website to see if there's an updated driver?
Daughter has updated all the drivers. We've gone online, done everything they've said. It wasn't until brother-in-law, who's called here before, kind of worked with her to come up with changing all sorts of things in Vista to make sure that she could at least scan it. But it's all being driven from the PC. It's not like you can walk up and scan.
Yeah.
So I'm going to call them back. I've got my claim in and my number in, and I'll just keep calling back and protesting. But I've heard here that there's maybe something that companies won't support until the next generation. Just didn't know whether this is one I should just stop bothering and say, use what you can, live with the tools you have, and scan from initiating from the computer, and don't bother trying anymore.
And that's why a lot of people are choosing to uninstall Vista and buy XP, because it works with so many more things.
Sorry.
Yep.
So my best option, and of course, Vista's a problem anyway. She sends me emails, and I said, I can't read it. And I work at a company that used to be Kodak. Now it's sold off, and I can't read anything she says.
Right.
And my company says they're not, Vista isn't ready for them.
Right.
So maybe the best bet is to ask her really how many people are in Ithaca College are counting on Vista, and is there a way of like setting up a partition and doing a dual boot, or... So I can get, I'll just get her Vista, or get her
XP. You're probably going to have a hard time doing that because, I mean, if you're going from XP and adding Vista, yeah, you could probably do a dual boot, but I don't know going backwards.
Okay.
Just because of the structure and all that.
See, now, they're probably recommending Vista because of the added security involved in Vista, which makes it a more secure operating system. But
even that's not as good as XP's.
Yeah, and the big issue with Vista is it doesn't work with anything else. If you want to use just that computer and not connect to anything else, Vista's fine.
Yep.
Well, I have a friend that works with me that she's going to U of R getting her MBA, and they got the same issues. You know, a lot of the stuff they get distributed is Vista, and she goes, what the heck do I do? And she has a company laptop like I do, and talked to the folks at work, and they said, I think they set her up and said, look, they put an icon that says you can launch on XP or you can launch on Vista for, like, Excel.
Well, if you're talking about the Office 2007 stuff, you can run Office 2007 under XP.
Okay.
So that's certainly doable.
Yeah. But the problem is that Office 2007 changed the file format. So that could be why you can't open her email. She's sending you an Office 2007 file. You must have Office 2007 to open that file.
Right, and you can have that under XP.
Right.
Yeah, this is different from operating system.
Right. Right.
Okay, well.
All right, we got to move on.
Thank you.
Thanks, Blake. Our next caller is Roger from Rochester. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
I was wondering, I was wondering about a tool called Snippet Test in Vista, and I was wondering if I could get that for XP.
This is the thing that clips a part of your screen out?
Yeah, or you can draw any like an error message or something like that. You can draw it exactly, and it's like a screenshot. It's basically what it is, except you can design it yourself, and it's very simple to use. It's called Snippet in Vista. And I was just wondering if that would work in XP, if you could get it for XP.
Not that program, but there's a lot of other screen capture programs for Windows that do similar things.
Well, XP has its own screen capture.
Yeah, you capture the whole screen and then delete the stuff you don't want.
You know, sometimes you just don't want all that. Sometimes you like to just draw exactly what you want. I was just wondering if there was any free program, something similar to Snippet that I could get.
Yeah, that's built into the Mac, so we haven't had to...
Right, there's a product called Quick Screen Capture. That's at etrussoft.com. Quick Screen Capture. That wasn't easy for me to say, apparently.
Okay, Quick Screen Capture.
Right, there's a screen capture tool from nonags.com, which is available. There's one for... in Internet Explorer only, but that won't do anything else with the screen.
Oh, okay.
But there are a number of them. If you were to do a Google search for screen capture XP part of screen, there's 500,000 of them that show up.
Oh, I upgraded from Vista just a short time ago to XP, and
I like the way you put
that's
that.
That's one tool that I did like.
Right, and now you can get it. So all you have to do is do a search. As I said, go to Google, type in screen capture XP part of screen, and you'll see 586,000 choices.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you.
PC World has a few of them, too.
Yep. That's interesting.
Here's one called MW Snap.
Same idea.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is Bruce. From Massena, New York. Welcome, Bruce. What's your question?
Well, I got a question for you. Number one is, you guys have a really great show.
Thank you.
And number two is, I keep getting an error message when I start the computer up. It's a laptop, Toshiba, Windows XP. It says, can't load, and it's all in caps, LXSUPMON.DLL. And I didn't know, how do you resolve it, and what is it?
LXSUPMON.DLL. All right. That's a lovely question.
Lexmark support monitor.
Yeah, it's the Lexmark printer.
Oh, okay.
Do you have one?
I do have one, but it's in a different location. It's not online right now. We've got a cottage, and it's about 130
Okay, so what it probably is it's probably trying to start in the startup.
Okay.
And it's looking for it. If you go into MSConfig.
MSConfig, okay.
And click on the startup tab, and you'll see something referencing the Lexmark printer.
Okay.
Uncheck it. Because what it is Lexmark is noted for that.
Well, all the printers, which we were talking about earlier, it's a program running in your computer all the time,
checking to see if you're gonna, printer. Yeah, trying to talk to it.
Is it out of ink? Is it out of paper? Did you push the button on the printer?
So just uncheck, and if
the printer's not there, it's going to blow an error because if the printer's not there.
Okay.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple
minutes. Hey, Nick, wait a minute. I got to do something here really quick here. Please. I was told I have to say hello to somebody that's listening right now, and I was told that if I do so, they would have their daughter make me dinner for an entire week, so I'm all cool with this.
Well, let's go for it.
All right, Bonnie and Kirby Spring listening in Greece. Want to say hello to them.
Hi, Bonnie. Hi.
And Kirby.
Kirby.
Yeah, and
like
their daughter, Christina.
Medium well.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And Dave, you fixed her computer a couple of months ago. Christina's computer a couple of months ago.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the one with all that material on it. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And Chris wanted to thank someone.
Yeah, I attended my first Lugor meeting last Thursday.
There you go.
The Linux Users Group of Rochester. Made a couple of new friends, Joe Anderson and Carl Schmidtman, who was kind enough to invite me to another function that was being held at the Greece Library, and talked a lot about Ubuntu and how to make them share files with Windows machines.
There you go.
Fascinating guys, fascinating conversations. I thank them both.
There you go. Back in just a couple of minutes, 41 minutes after the hour, sound bites. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm bribed easily. Hey, you say free dinner for a week, I'll thank everybody. I'm here. Right. You know what I'm saying?
There you go. My wife dragged me to a concert here in town years ago. These up-and-coming country stars.
Big and Rich.
Big and Rich, yeah.
And
they're
Brad
great.
Paisley, and now all these really huge country stars.
Right.
I saw them when they were nobodies.
Well, you know, the funny part about it is country music actually makes me want to hurt myself.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But, you know, there's some songs that are not too bad.
And now we're seeing a lot of the mix between country rock and, you know, bands like Kid Rock. And I saw ZZ Top on the Country Channel.
ZZ Top rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, even on the Country Channel.
Right, so Southern rock has sort of been adopted by the Country Channel.
Yeah, rock, because country music is now a lot less about my wife left me, my dog left me, I had to shoot this.
Yeah, that's what do you get when you play Shoot the Truck or
something
backwards.
Right. So, but it's less about that nowadays. Anyway, we don't care about that. We care about Jim from Rochester, who's calling in with a question. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Good. How you doing today?
Good, and you?
Good. Wife was online last night.
It's always the wife's fault, isn't it?
Well,
boy, am I going to get him in trouble. And me, now that I come to think of it.
Yeah.
Your wife is a saint, and so
careful,
is mine.
Man.
What's your question, Jim?
No, my wife is a saint, so if she's listening, I need to get some points there.
There you go.
She was online last night. I went to load up the computer today to boot it up, and now it's prompting for passwords to log in. So I got Windows XP, and it's looking for a password to even get into the computer.
What happens if you just say, hit next?
It doesn't do anything. It gives me an error. I'm trying to bring it up right now. That says that you're not allowed.
Right. It wants a password. Well, okay.
It's looking for a password. So we used to have a password enabled, and it used to be if you forgot your password, you hit the little button, and it says your reminder.
Yep.
Well, we don't have that. I asked her, I said, did you put a password in? She said, absolutely not. I don't know what is going on here.
I wonder if there's a new virus going around resetting passwords.
Well, I was just about to say.
This is the third call today.
I was about to say, one of the things I might suggest you do, and now I'm also going to suggest it to the other two people who called when the, well, not Jackie in Toronto, that's a whole other story, but to anybody with a password,
The error that I get, it says, local policy of this system does not permit you to log on interactively.
Right.
You've been hacked by an administrator user that has disabled your account, it sounds like.
Right, that's what it sounds like. So your best bet is to take your machine to somebody reputable like Dave or Steve and have them check your machine for viruses, which they can do by pulling your hard drive, sticking in another machine, and cleaning it off there. And we'll see if that brings, well, it might not bring everything back, but at least we'll know if it was caused by a virus. Because once the policy is set, you don't just unset the policy magically. Yeah. But it is certainly possible that that was the problem.
My mother got hit by one of those a couple of months ago, and she thought it was one of us kids because the name of the user, they created their own user called, and she thought it said Star Trek. Oh, that's one of the kids.
Right.
Because my brother and I both remotely access her computer to help her do stuff.
Right.
But someone hacked in and created their own username and doing their own nefarious things.
Right. So anyway, that's our suggestion, Jim. All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco. It's 49 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Was that? Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, we're some. I simply wasn't ready. We were discussing first-person shooters and which was the first one, and I say it was that old LucasArts game. The I can't think of the name of it, Deadshot or Deadeye. It was the Old West, and you were the first-person shooter guy, and it was a very old one.
For a lot of Mac people, it was Marathon, put out by Bungie. It used to be a Mac-only gaming company until Microsoft bought them, and they turned Marathon into Halo.
And now they're their own company again. They can do whatever they want.
Well, they've released Marathon as open source, and someone just re-released and rewrote a Marathon for
We
for
only
Mac.
Got a couple of minutes. Our next caller is Ed from Clifton Springs. Ed, what's your question?
Hi, guys. Happy Easter.
You too.
Thank you.
Hey, I have a question about IRQs.
Yep.
I have a Pentium 4 with XP Home, and it lists the IRQs 0 through 14.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2 and 7 have nothing listed.
Mm-hmm.
Number 9 has 4 items assigned to it, and 11 has 3 items assigned to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all pretty normal.
Okay. So that's not going to slow anything down by having them run off.
No, that's all pretty normal. IRQs are interrupt requests. Every once in a while, some hardware device needs the attention of the machine now, not in 2 seconds. And that's what an IRQ does, lets you grab the machine. And it doesn't matter how many you have on one device as long as those devices don't conflict. So, for example, if you've got a USB chain of things, they'll all be on the same IRQ, but they all handle that pretty well in terms of how that works. So, yeah, you have nothing to worry about.
Okay, but my hard drive, the SCSI drive,
yeah,
that's
you
the one
really
that's got 4 other...
14 and 15 are for hard drives.
Okay, but it's got 4 assigned to that same IRQ.
Yes, not a problem.
No,
okay.
Not an issue.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, thanks, Ed.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, back in the day, we used to play...
Caller is Jim from Rochester. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hey, on Windows Vista, the little clock that's down at the bottom there, how come that changes so often?
Because time moves on, Jim.
Right. That's a good answer.
Thank you.
But not the what he wants.
How do you mean it changes?
It loses an hour.
A daylight savings time bug.
12:56 now. Let's say I turn it on tomorrow. It may be reading 11:56 instead.
Are you in the right time zone?
Well, yeah, I've changed it endlessly, and I've tried to lock the toolbar.
If it keeps losing time, what it might be is the battery in your machine.
If it's losing exactly an hour or gaining exactly an hour, that's one of the daylight savings time bugs.
Or, like I say, if he's losing it, then that could be a weak battery.
But it's a fairly new computer.
That doesn't matter. I mean, there's no date time stamp on that battery. Right. So when that motherboard was put together, that battery could have already been a year old.
And as you well know, they make a billion of these things a day, and every once in a while, you're going to get a bad one.
Yeah.
And they're relatively cheap. I mean, you can get one for like $5.
Right.
And, you know, swap it out. It's a wafer-sized battery.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure the machine's turned off. It's plugged in so you can ground yourself and change the battery.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cheap enough to try, and like I say, you don't know when those...
99 times out of 100, that solves the problem.
Yep.
Okay, and where do I buy one of these batteries?
You can go to Radio Shack, Rite Aid, any of them.
It's usually a
2024?
2032.
Okay.
There you go.
All right, thanks.
Thanks. Our next caller is Pat from Webster, New York. Welcome, Pat. What's your question?
Just wanted to know how the built-in firewall on the DSL modems or your cable modems or whatever, how strong are those? And, I mean, how realistic is it?
There isn't one.
They're not.
There is no firewall in those cable routers or DSL routers.
It's only in the Linksys if you have a cable modem going to a router.
If you have just the router the modem that came with your cable or DSL connection, and that's the only one you have, there really isn't much of a firewall in there. I would suggest either... If you only have one machine, then download something like Zone Alarm or some other firewall to protect that machine. If you've got more than a couple of machines, then you've
you're better off with buying a home router, which does include a firewall.
Like Linksys.
Like a Linksys router or a D-Link router, which would have a much better firewall in it, now, and then you'll have to protect it in one place.
Some of the cable DSL routers will have multiple ports on them, but the thing to check is what address you're getting. If you're getting a private address, like 192.something or 10.something, then you do have a NAT firewall loaded, and that works pretty good for incoming protection.
But well, you still have a NAT loaded, and that's sort of firewall-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so I'll try one of the other.
Oh, shoot, and we're out of time. I just want to remind everyone very quickly, this Thursday at noon, March 27th, Thursday, is a Leopard Server Seminar, the power of Unix, the ease of use of Macintosh, and come to our website, mac-av.com, and sign up.
All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, the mighty, mighty Rob Linton, who actually appears awake today. I don't know how you made a massive infusion of chocolate early in the morning. Must be what did it. I'm Nick Francesco. Let me really thank again Wagner James Au, our guest today, who we really, I wish we could have had him on for the entire show. He was fascinating. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. Thanks so much for listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.